Good evening, everybody. I am Poet Taylor. I want to thank you for coming out tonight. Before I start my story, a little back history on me. I am the youngest of five children, biologically, to marry an Orange Harris out of Detroit, Michigan. I just learned that March of this year when I reconnected with my biological mother on her 73rd birthday, which is another story that I have to tell you at the next storytelling event because of the one that I prepared for this evening. We ended up in care because my parents were addicts, and they left us with our sick grandmother. And my brother, Tony, was trying to make me a bottle, spilt the hot milk on him, and burnt all the skin off his arm. We were removed after that. What I wouldn't learn until I was older was that part of my biological family kept two of my siblings, and then three of us were put into care. So my story starts when my adoptive mother, because I was adopted after being in the care, and I thought that was like the golden crown or the golden ticket. Not always the case. My adoptive mother had left town. We had had a death in the family. We all couldn't go. It was altogether like six children. So one parent had to stay back. At the time, I had the flu. My adoptive father comes to me and he says, "You've been throwing up. You have a fever. Sleep in my room tonight because I don't want you to throw up in your sleep and you choke yourself." I am about 7 or 8. It made perfect sense to me. I don't want to die in my sleep. I don't want to throw up on my favorite My Little Pony nightgown, so why not? I woke up to my father penetrating me. And it took a moment as I laid in that bed to realize exactly what was going on. And it's funny, because even as a kid, you don't necessarily have words for what's being done to you. But you have vivid memories of things that you remember. I remember when my mother would step out the house, how he would play games with me that would end with my dress over my head and him biting my butt cheek or grabbing me on my chest. And at 7, you're thinking, maybe this is just how fathers and daughters get it in. I didn't know. When he realized that I was awake, he stopped. And I'll never forget. It's funny. Sometimes you can't remember what you wore to work. I can on Monday. But I remember the abyss playing on the TV. I remember hearing that. I remember the smell of my mother's perfume in that room. And I hopped out of bed and I thought, where do I go? I ran downstairs to the basement. My two older brothers' room had been set down there to give them privacy because they were growing up. And as the irky youngest sister, I used to hide down there and scare them in the morning. I hid behind a painting all night and cried, afraid that if I said something, it would ruin my family. And was it even wrong what he was doing? Because I didn't know. Why else would he be doing it? The next morning, I go right into the flow of things. I pretend like I was down there to scare my brother, and I avoid my father at all costs. My mom comes home like a day and a half later, and I had contemplated, because when you're in care, I was in foster care, and all I kept hearing was, you don't want to be the bad child, and you keep getting kicked out of homes. So I grappled with telling her what had transpired. And then finally, I was like, she loves me, and I'm going to tell her. My God. I told her, and she made me feel like she would protect me from everything. She told me she couldn't believe that he touched me. How dare he? She cuddled me, and she kissed me, and she thanked God that it wasn't worse. And she said, I'm going to handle this right now. I was like, yeah, I'm going to go kick his ass, yeah. Man. About 30 minutes later, she called me upstairs, called me to her room. And I walked in there like, we about to handle him. Yeah, he can't touch me no more. He was sitting in his recliner chair, and she turned to him and she said, did you touch that? I know you didn't touch that, because that's what she's saying. And he looked me in my face and he laughed and he said, why would I touch that? And she made me strip in front of him and gave me a beating, and I'll never forget it, because this time she wrapped the bottom of the belt around her hand, and she hit me with the buckle part. To this day, on this side of my chest, there's the imprint of that buckle. I look at it every morning. It's faded over the years, but I look at it every morning, and I'm reminded of that moment. And as I stood there, and she beat me, and he looked at me, and she laughed, I thought, my God, I will never share this story again. And after that, whenever he wanted to come into my room, whenever he wanted to touch me somewhere in the house, he got to. Now, eventually, my adoptive parents would break up. And I'm thinking, great, she cheated on him. You a pedophile. I'm out. When she left, she took her biological children. By now, my brother and sister who were adopted with me had gone. She said, I never wanted to adopt you. And you see what he wanted to adopt you for, and she left me with him. So now we're in D.C., and I'm going to Lincoln Junior High School and then eventually Dunbar. And I am at home cooking. And when my father wants to come in my room, he can. And I got to go and not act like anything's wrong, because I remember the last time that I told, nobody cared. By this time, I'm going to church because I kept hearing how God would save you. He'd never forsake you. He'd never leave you. I'm leaving praise and worship service. And by now, I'm like 11, 12. I'm like, God is going to rescue me. And in a game of truth or dare with the pastor's daughter's daughter, it comes out that my father's been touching me. And I'm like, this is now going to be when I am rescued from this hell that I call everyday life. Marching to the pastor's office. She's told him what happened. I'm ready. The pastor sits behind his desk, and I'm like, okay. By now, my father's a deacon at this church, so I'm scared of now what this will do. And he says, you know, sometimes when little girls are mad at their daddy, they make up stories. I can't believe that one of my great deacons would be doing anything remotely close like that to you. A part of me died that day. I wanted all of me to die that night, and I was not successful. And then it was a woman at the church. We went to church like 2 Sundays later, and she said, I heard something, and I just want to talk to you about it. And I laid all my issues at her feet from the beginning to the end. By the end of church, he had been approached by other people in the church. He runs, and now I'm just left in D.C., Now I'm in an emergency group home where I meet girls with stories that I never even fathomed, that mirrored mine, matched mine. And I'm thinking, my God, it's this many of us? And now, because I'm not a cute baby anymore, and now I'm about to hit 13, I'm not wanted by foster homes, and the group home counselors think that I'm gonna bring all kind of issues to them. And I was just like, well, here we are. I ran away so much that the police were giving me birthday cards. I used to think that was so lame, and then I realized that's somebody caring about you and wanting to leave you something so that even in those moments you think you're not cared about, you are. I have a family court judge, and after coming, I got locked up for stabbing somebody with a fork. Then I got in trouble for doing this. She was like, I want to take you out of where you are, and hopefully if I place you somewhere else, you'll be better. And I thought, well, I don't know what's better than these group homes and all this living I'm having now, but I'm here for it. I moved to Baltimore County in my first foster home. I'm like, I'm ready for this. My first night there, the nephew of the woman whose home this is says, hey, let me put you on to something. When I come in your room, don't say nothing. Don't fight it. You can tell my aunt. She ain't gonna care. She know all y'all got issues and y'all fast anyway. And I was like, what? What kind of introduction? What? Wait. Thought he was joking. He was serious. He tested that theory that night. And for the year and some change that I lived there. And I didn't know who to tell. My social worker was in D.C. He hadn't came to check on me. And I'm just in this situation. And now I'm now beefing with the other girl in my house because she thinks that what he's doing to us is some kind of love. And I'm impeding upon her relationship. We eventually get into it. We have one of them bad situations where the police are called, and anybody who's been in care, you know we got two options. We either go into a juvenile detention center, or we gonna fake like we hear voices because we know the next step is you gonna make me talk to a doctor at the hospital. Let me tell you now, very young, you earn how to manipulate the system so that you don't end up somewhere you don't want to because you feel like nobody's listening to you anyway. I end up in Shepherd Pratt. There's a counselor there that says, you're not crazy. What's really going on with you? And we talk and we talk. And by this point, I'm on suicide watch because in my mind, I have absolutely nothing to live for. And I believe that God is a joke because you told me you'd never leave me or forsake me, but here I sit. I was transferred to a Baltimore foster care agency, PSI. Get this guy named Alan Stewart. And he's like, I believe in you and love you and see you even if you don't believe in yourself. And I told him, yeah, okay, sir. Whatever. I said, all right. He said, I got a home lined up for you. Your life's about to change. And I was like, yeah. Okay. I got out and I met Patricia and George Taylor. What do you say to the people who picked you up at your lowest and made you love yourself in a way that you never even thought was imaginable? For every foster parent in the room, thank you for rolling the dice and loving a child that's not yours unconditional. I walked into my mother's house. We were talking about it earlier today while I was driving here. She said, you walked in there with your arms folded. Well, when you gonna kick me out then? She loves to imitate me, but she don't do me like I do me. When you gonna kick me out then? When you gonna kick me out then? Because I know I ain't gonna be here long. This, I mean, she was like, you was a handful. You know what my mother told me? I love you. And when you're ready to receive all this love that we got, come sit at the table. I would skip dinner, sat in my room. And then the more she just, hey, I love you. Have a good day. I ain't talking to that lady. I don't know this lady. I don't know what she doing. My father, George Taylor, hey, you need anything? You want to go? No, I ain't going with y'all. Nah, nah, nah. And slowly. Because by now, words meant absolutely nothing to me. You were either going to show me or not at all. And I was trying to plot my escape. There were two problems. The house was a mile from the bus stop. Chick wasn't walking there. And I really wasn't sure where I was to know where I was going. So I was kind of stuck. And I think that was God's divine intervention. Because in that home, my God, there's no way I'd be standing on this stage having this conversation if my mother wouldn't have diligently poured into me. And when I opened myself up to her, I learned that she only took teenagers with issues because we normally sit in group homes for years and age out into absolutely nothing. Or we have a social worker who has so much on her plate that when this foster kid, me, scores 14 points away from a perfect score on her GED, I got expelled from all the high schools in D.C. and Baltimore. But that's another story for another stoop tour. I'm telling y'all that didn't want to see me go to college because it meant she'd have to keep my file for like another 4 years. It was my mother, Patricia, that was like, well, they don't want to help you. We're putting you in this apartment at 17. You fail, you're coming home, and we'll figure out what you don't know. Fast forward to me now. In all the nights that there were people touching me and doing things, and I felt like dying was so much easier than breathing. As I got closer to God, I would have these conversations where I don't need to be rich. I don't need to be famous. I want to be able to have a platform that allows me to be a voice that I didn't have. I want to be the ears and listen twice as hard as I speak for those kids who have told their story over and over and over again and had people tell them they were lying and they weren't worth me to even look into it. I wanted to be that person. So every day when I pod that mic at PGC, I'm reminded of my steps. And that unfortunately, there are people that hear my voice that are dealing with it, growing out of it, trying to figure out how they're going to make their way through. And I'm thankful that God wants to use me as a beacon to shine that light to home. For the people of Presley Ridge, you may not ever know how you impact and what it is that you do. I'm talking from the administrative assistant to the social worker. I am a walking testimony of your work. And that it works when the village is willing to work together. George and Patricia Taylor are in here. My mother has a swollen knee. My father has a cough. And y'all still showed up for me as usual. I love y'all. Earlier, we talked about what happens when your bio is not there. For those not in the know, bio is biological family, but sometimes you don't want to say the whole word. So to that I say, to those that step in the place of sisters not there, like my sister Dina, to the unofficial godmothers like Miss Georgia, who take those friends of your kids' friends under your wing and you feed them and you clothe them and you nurture them, you fostering and don't even know that you fostering. So go ahead and sign up now because we need you. And if you take nothing else away from this evening, from me even hitting this stage, you are seen. You are heard. You are not here by accident. If you're standing in this space, in this moment, there's work for you to do that you're going to pour seeds into that you won't even be alive to see people reap the benefits. That's just the way this works. Thank you.